Welcome to another exciting episode of the Street Photography Show podcast. I am your host, Mark Rossi, and tonight we will be speaking with Paolo Moria. If you haven't done so already, make sure to check out the show notes below to find out more about Paolo. Welcome to the show, Paolo. How are you, sir?
Hi, Mark. I'm fine. And you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Street Photography Show podcast. Really, really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, believe me.
So, Paolo, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into photography? Where do you currently live? And specifically, how did you get into street photography?
Well, that's a very, very long question to answer.
That's good. Maybe I'll get a very long answer.
Yeah, possibly you will. First, I live in Portugal, in Europe, in a city, wonderful city called Porto, which is renowned worldwide for the wine. Port wine. And I'm 55 years old. So I've been into photography, not as a photographer, because I'm not a photographer. I'm just someone who likes to write down visual notes. So I was about, I had just gone into college, university here. I always had this thing for photography. And then at our university, there was some photography course, very basic, you know. And that's where I learned how to develop film, because no digital cameras back then. And it started out from there, really. So I was, 19 years old? 20, to most, if I remember it correctly. So that would be in 1990, around that. And from there on, I started to buy cameras. And started to get more information, because at the time there was the information that we have at the moment. There was no internet, so we had to buy books, which were very expensive here. We had to sort for, courses, photography courses, not online, of course, but physical ones. And that wasn't easy either, or cheap. But I got a break, and I got a free course in photography. From then on, I stayed with, it was a government agency, and I stayed with them as fully sponsored for nearly, 6-7 years, because then I finished university, I joined the army, and I was still there because they opted to offer a very long photography course of 3 years, which I accepted to enroll absolutely free. And until 1995, around that time, I was, getting my all the knowledge that I have in photography, not very much, but whatever I have. And it started out from there. I was then invited to teach photography by that governmental institution, and parallel to my job, I got out of the army, and then I resumed my civilian life, and always I became a certified photography teacher. And so I started to teach photography along with my job at the time, and so it was never a very serious thing for me. As for photography, street photography, I was always in love with the images that I saw in black and white from Cartier-Bresson and, Duano and people like that. And of course, I was not remotely even. I never considered to do street photography back then because I am really very shy. At the time, I was even worse than I am now. So I opted more for something that I like in photography, which was graphic photography, colors, shapes, patterns. But street photography and black and white photography still remained inside me. And I took the jump nearly 20 years ago, still on film age. And I started to shoot black and white, and I started to lose the fear that I had to be on the street and to be in the street and to be exposed to people and all that. And since then, I haven't done anything else except street photography, because the rest really doesn't appeal to me. And I am really, really in love with black and white photography. I've always been. Last week I shot color film, Kodak Vision, the cinema one, first time in my life, and the first one in a very long time. Just for the sake of it, just for fun. But I really don't do color photography, so I don't remember shooting a color film in the last, 10 years, except for this one last week. But it's an odd one because it's the 500T, the tungsten one. To summarize, what I like in photography.
Yeah, so, you are then, by all intents and purposes, you are formally trained as a photographer.
My relationship professionally with photography has always been as a teacher doing workshops collaborating with photography schools, even with some very nice projects we had here regarding social inclusion of people who were excluded from society, poor people, drug addicts, children, very poor children, and to make them come to school to have fun with photography, you know, one of the things, you know, extracurricular activities and all that. And I participated in that. I still do my workshops. I cooperate and collaborate with people, especially one good friend of mine who has the one of the references in Portugal concerning analog photography, a shop, and we do all sorts of very nice things there.
So you mentioned you shot on film, obviously. What film stock would you use primarily back in the day, and maybe even to this day for that matter?
I have the fondest memory in color, because I have to admit I shot in color for many years. So I really liked the Fuji range of films back then, the Superior, and because there was such a forward leap, you know, you cannot imagine at the time using other brands. When Superior, which was a consumer grade film, it wasn't a professional film, when it came along, it was very cheap and it was declined in several sensitivities, like 100 to 100, 400, even 800. At 800, it was amazing because the grain you got from it was the same as you would get in the competition's 400 films, and the colors were vivid. It was amazing. So I have, you know, the utmost fond memories of using Fujifilm color, the Superior. Back then, Kodak had an Ektar, which was different from the one they have today. It was declined in the version of 25 ISO or ISO 25. It was an amazing film. Ektar is still an amazing film for people who are into color. It's a shame that it's so expensive. But back then, with ISO 25, it was the most amazing film for color. It was virtually grainless. You cannot see any grain at all, of course, ISO 25. And the colors were simply even more amazing than they are today with the 100 ISO version. That's for color, because I never stray away from Kodak or Fuji, to be very honest. I did some incursions with Agfa, but I always used basically Fujifilm. In black and white, I was always very fond of Kodak films. You know, I'm old, but I used at the time the T-Max range, which was fairly new, and I got used to T-Max. So I wasn't really a great fan of Ilford films and stuff like that. So I shot hundreds of thousands of T-Max films. And I even used a film, which I don't know in America, in Canada or in the USA, the name that they used. Here in Europe, it was called Kodak CN400, which was a black and white film compatible with C41 chemistry. So in fact, it was a color film devoid of any colorants, and it was amazing.
Yeah, and just to answer your question, it was sold here, and in fact, I think I have a roll of that or two frozen in my freezer. Now, it's expired, but I do know which film you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it was called the Portra Black and White there.
Well, I think it's actually labeled CN400, but I'm not entirely sure. But it is the C41 process.
Then prepare yourself. If it is well preserved, it doesn't suffer from any of the faults classically tied with that sort of films.
Right. Well, I've shot it before. I mean, I'm almost as old as you, to be honest with you. So I've shot it before. I've shot all kinds of films. So I just came across that at a flea market, and the guy's like, yeah, it was always in the freezer. It was always, you know, refrigerated. So I thought, okay, fine, I'll buy it. But I haven't tried this one yet. These rolls that I have here, just, you know, like I said, they're in my freezer and they're just waiting for me to pop them open.
Back then, we did not have the black and white offer that we have today in Europe, because in Europe, we get the most amazing offer of black and white films. There is no shortage of black and white film. But during the 90s, it wasn't the case here. So we were pretty much limited to Ilford, Kodak. And Fuji did not enjoy the reputation that they enjoy now. So the Neopan 400 film, for instance, wasn't the greatest. I avoided it. After, you know, the digital explosion and when film nearly disappeared, these new brands started to appear in the European market. And for me, it was a revelation because I didn't know that they existed. I don't think they existed at all back then. And I love their black and white films. So to be very honest, now, although I love the Acros film, the second version from Fuji, it's really expensive. And so we have to, I have to manage costs like anyone else. And my favorite film at the moment is from Rolly. The camera maker, which doesn't exist anymore. There's a film from Rolly called the Rolly Retro ATS. It's a fantastic film for me. It's everything I like in a black and white film. Super contrasty, low grain, low speed. I haven't really fell out of love with Kodak T-Max, but they cost twice as much. So, of course, film is expensive. Even it's me doing the processing and all that, but purchasing the film, it's really expensive. So the Rolly Retro ATS, and it has some brothers, the 200 version called Superpan, the 400, which basically share this trait, these characteristics. And for me, it's an amazing film. Of course, I live in a very sunny country and I am not afraid of low sensitivities. So I never go beyond ISO 200, ever, ever. I don't like ISO 400. I don't need it for street photography. So that film for me is at the moment, well, for the past, I'd say 3 years, it goes before the pandemic. And it was just by chance because this friend of mine that I mentioned before has this amazing store that sells everything that is connected with analog. They introduced me to this Rolly film, and I didn't want it at the time. I wanted to buy, like a Kodak or something like that. And they said, no, we offer you, try this one. This is on the house for free. And I did, and I was hooked on since that time. There's another very cheap film that I like, which is the Foma 200. And I use it. I know people don't like Foma, and I don't like it very much, the 100 film, but the 200 is a different emulsion. So it's nice and contrasty with very nice grain and very cheap. And so cheap talks a lot to my heart and to my pocket, as you can see. And so I like it. It's very flexible. And so basically today I shoot with that. And incredibly, I've gone back to Ilfo. And I've since made peace with the Ilfo FP4.
So you mentioned the Foma Pan. I actually use Foma Pan film. I use the 400. I do actually like the 400. I also use a lot of the cheaper stocks because, like you and like most of our listeners who shoot on film, film is expensive and we try to do what we can to save money. So growing up, I shot, you know, the creme de la creme. I shot with Tri-X all the time. That was my film stock back in the day. And, you know, nowadays I will put my hands on pretty much anything that is cheap. Because once I get it into the computer, I'm what they would call back in the early 2000s, they used to call us hybrid shooters. And we were basically guys that would shoot film, then we would scan our negatives or our positives, and we would have a digital image that we could work with in post in the computer. Now what I do is I do the same thing. I scan. I have a scanner that I use to scan all my negatives. Normally I do the developing. I do my own developing here in my place. I use Fomapam 400. Because it is a good, I like it. You know, there is a love-hate relationship. I love the Fuji Acros, but it's super expensive. God, is that film beautiful. I've been using a lot of Kentmere 400. It's not exactly the most thrilling black and white film. In fact, it's pretty washed out when you develop it. You know, depending, of course, what developer you use. But let's say you bring it to a lab. Most labs are using things like D76 for developing, right? Because it's really, really, really cheap. And you get your negatives back if you bring it to a lab and you get your negatives back, they're going to look washed out. So you put it in the computer and I can pretty much take that black and white negative to anywhere I want it. I can play with the tones. I can play with the contrast. So I can do all of that stuff and I can try to make it more, let's say, Acros look. I can mimic it. I can manipulate it the way I want. That's kind of where I'm at. I shoot really cheap film and then I just try to get it to where I want in post. Because honestly, and actually, if you want to go one step further, what I've been doing also is buy bulk film. I'm very much like you. I think a lot of our listeners are like that as well, where they just try to buy the cheapest stuff. You know, one company that seems to be doing really well in terms of keeping the film costs relatively still sane, I guess, Lomography. To be honest with you, I really like a lot of Lomography films. In fact, one of my favorite for 120 is the Lomo 400, which is a color film. It's their, you know, it is their color film. I don't know what the box looks like now. They always keep changing. But, you know, Lomography is always known for that very flashy packaging and very upbeat sort of colors. You know, they try to make things look different, right? Nowadays, I've been using that color stock. When I can get my hands on it, believe it or not, it's always out of stock. So when I do find it, I always have to put in a bigger order. I'm just curious. Now, you know, obviously you're still shooting film. You're obviously, you know, I was on your Flickr and you've got quite a collection of film cameras. You know, I saw quite a few. What's one film camera that you like to use on an ongoing basis? Like, what's your go-to camera?
It's very hard for me. You have seen the quantity of cameras that I have. And I've got rid of like 200. So I've slashed down the collection by 200 because I have too many. But I don't like to shoot with, well, some are, you know, historical cameras. Some cameras are because they look really pretty. And let's say I have a group of cameras that are film cameras that I keep returning to. And people normally, I get frowned upon when I describe this group because people don't understand. There is no connection. There's nothing to understand. So I'll be very open with you. So my film system was Nikon. So I have dozens of Nikon lenses. And I have every single Nikon body SLR camera made. So I have plenty to choose from. I keep coming to the Nikon F3, you know, because of the viewing system. It's a very sweet camera. It's very so smooth to operate. It's not like other Nikons or Nikons, as you want to call them. So it doesn't, the shutter doesn't sound like a cannon firing. And I really like the camera. Plus, I can switch to a waist level finder, which is something that I love. I can take any lenses that I've got. So from autofocus lenses to the first Nikon lenses.
Yeah, I mean, I have that camera. I have the F3 HP.
Normally my first choice. It has a remarkable viewfinder and I like that. So I have the three viewing systems, the HP, the normal one, and the waist level finder.
The F3 HP also has the same thing. It has a waist level finder. I mean, it's just a phenomenal camera. I love it.
Without the silly motor drives and battery packs and whatever, it's very small. So people think the F3 is a monster. Yes, because you see it on old pictures of photographers doing races and stuff like that. So the cameras are huge. But the simple, the basic F3 is remarkably small. And it's not too heavy. So I really like it. And of course, I still use my first SLR. As we say in Portuguese, I don't know if you say it in Canada, there's no love like our first love. So I still use my first camera, real camera, was a Praktika B-series camera with bayonet mount. So it's not the classical, indestructible MTL series or whatever. So it was already the electronic version, B200. That I still have, and that I still use. And I've bought, I have like 20 Praktikas now, because I feel I owe the brand, because I know everything about photography also because of them, because it wasn't for that first Praktika, I wouldn't be today here talking to you. Yeah, I enjoy immensely taking pictures with it, because it has the most amazing lenses, because those East Germans knew how to make different lenses. So they have some Zeiss lenses, you know, true Zeiss lenses from East, which are amazing and work amazing. And so I have no people say, how can you shoot with a Praktika when you have a Nikon and Leicas and all that? That's another thing. The Leica M system, one of my favorite cameras for street photography. Basically, nowadays I just use either the Leica M6, the M5, which I'm a great, great fan of the M5. And also the old Canon rangefinders, the Canon Leica rangefinders, those with interchangeable lenses, L39 lens.
Good man. I have two of those.
Yeah, the 7, and I love the 7F.
I've got two Canon Ps.
I have a P2. I also have the Russian ones, which I really find them amazing for, you know, in terms of price performance. When they work correctly, if you look after them, they can produce amazing pictures. So definitely the Leicas for me for street photography. It's not because it's a Leica or the Canons, it's the same. It's because they are very, nobody looks twice at you. So they're very silent. The Canons are the same. So I really like it. In terms of medium format, because you mentioned 120 for Kentmere, I was listening, and I really don't like medium format except for my Rolleiflexes. I don't like TLRs. I never did like TLRs. Always avoided them. One day by chance, someone sold me a Rolleiflex for, I don't know, 1/3 of the price. I intended to, you know, to make a quick profit and resell it, to be very honest. And then I played with it and I said, man, I can't sell this. This camera is amazing. I made my first film. My first mistake, you know, losing the Rolleiflex. Since then, now I have four of them.
Well, there you go. You're a believer.
I am a believer, but I don't have any other TLR camera, or do I want to have TLR cameras?
So because you've been in photography for such a long time, who would you say inspired you the most during your photographic journey?
That would be Henri Cartier-Bresson.
And why him?
I find his pictures amazing. I find the concept of the decisive moment absolutely amazing. I agree with him regarding what defines photography. I am on board with him about everything that he has ever commented about photography. We differ in one thing. He apparently didn't really was interested in light that much. Light for me is very important, and he defined light as a perfume, and composition being the very first thing, which I agree. And so the way, for me, street photography is using, as it did, the streets and then the subjects, people, not only people, but whatever we had, and to compose a picture that made sense in terms of lines, geometry, which is so important, perspective, and to play with that. And you have no power over people. You have no power on the street. You are powerless. Your power is to frame and to compose. That's the only power you've got, and that's the power that really matters. And for me, he took advantage of that in a way that very few others did. I don't know if you are familiar with Doisneau, for instance, the French photographer as well. He was another one for me, which I love his work. And I also like modern photographers like Martin Parr, amazingly. I really like Martin Parr because I like the grotesque in urban areas. That's where I've always lived. But I would say that definitely Cartier-Bresson was still is my master.
Yeah, you've mentioned obviously a very famous, you've mentioned perhaps the most famous street photographer of all time as inspiration. What about someone that is not as famous? Is there someone that's not as famous that's inspired you or has taught you something?
There is a modern photographer, Alan Schaller. Alan Schaller, it's a photographer that I actually got to know during the COVID. Leica did a series of videos on YouTube inviting photographers who used Leica cameras. And I saw, I had nothing else to do. So I spent most of my days watching those videos. And one of those videos, this man appeared. This Alan Schaller, had no idea who he was. And we shared basically the same things because he loves Leica, although he shoots digitally with Leica. And he uses a 24mm lens, which is my favorite one as well. So I got interested and I went to Instagram and I started to follow him and see, you know, his pictures. And they are not Bretonian at all, but they are really fantastic. They're just street photography, and street photography about anything, even cats. And they're amazing. It's really, really amazing. He's an amazing photographer, which, to be very honest, I had no idea who he was until I saw that video. And then I asked some people at Leica about Alan Schaller. And of course, everybody knows him. He has made some exhibitions, apparently, with Leica and all that. It seems that the whole world knew about him, except me. So I really like him. It's not a sort of inspiration. It's more a sort of amazement for me. How you can turn very banal, you know, very ordinary subjects into something extraordinarily interesting. So I've learned a lot from him.
Would you say that's something that you try to do in your street photography? You try to turn something that's ordinary into something amazing? Or do you have a different train of thought when you go on the streets?
I think we all photographers, inverted commas, well, let's call it photographers, that do street photography, we want to do something memorable out of the ordinary, because the streets are the most ordinary thing you can find. So you don't have this wonderful background of a beach and palm trees and whatever, so idyllic sceneries. You just don't. So you have to do what you have, and it's very, very difficult to do extraordinary things with the ordinary. And that's the beauty of street photography. Like I mentioned before, you have no control of how you deal with your subjects, where you place them. So you have to wait. You have to calculate for the right moment, because the right moment is not seeing something and shooting away. You have to wait for everything to come together. That's what Henri Cartier-Bresson did. And that's what any street photographer does. We just don't point the camera and say, oh, lovely, there's a triangle, an intersection of lines and a man, and let me take this picture. No, it doesn't work like that. So we have to make the picture in our mind first. We have to make something that's not potentially very interesting into an interesting image. That's why street photography is so challenging, to me, at least.
That's actually a very good point, because I guess with what you just said, I could ask, well, how do you prepare yourself when you go out there and you try to make that memorable shot?
There are several elements. The first one is luck, of course. You have to be lucky, and that you cannot control. That's well, but it's one of the ingredients. It's one of the elements in the equation. The other one for me is the light. I go often to the same places. I go there mornings, afternoons. I don't really shoot at night, and see which is the best time to take pictures. It doesn't have anything to do with the subjects or whatever. Just the quality of light. If the shadows are too strong, if not, I know you can post-process many things, but that you can't. That's the only preparation that I do, because I always use the same film. No, it's the Rolly, basically, the Rolly Retro, or even the Fama 200. And so I go to the streets, to specific places that I've been before, and I know that at time of the day, with the weather that we have, the light is going to be like I like it. Because if it isn't, I'm not satisfied, because I really like light and the quality of light. For instance, I don't shoot during summertime here where I live, because the light is so strong. It's too harsh. So I hate summertime here for shooting. Wintertime is marvelous. It's fantastic, the light here. But during summertime, no. So the only preparation that I do is that I really travel light. So I go on foot with a camera, just one, and two lenses, basically, the 50mm and wide angles, either the 24. I am a wide angle fanatic. So I really like to take a 15mm, for instance, with a Leica. But it's very difficult. The wider you go, the more difficult it is to do street photography, because you start to get too many elements on the picture.
That's right. That's why I don't really like shooting with a wide angle, to be honest with you. The most I will ever shoot is a 40mm. And I will say that a 40mm, even though I still do it, I still prefer a 50, but I do have a 40mm that I love so much. I have a Voigtlander Ultron 2.0 lens that basically lives on my Nikon. And that is a phenomenal lens. I love it so much. But honestly, I couldn't go lower than that, because I just find it's way too wide for me. I feel that a wide angle like that is best if I'm in a crowded street. Like, I'll give you an example. You're in Turkey, Istanbul. The bazaars they have there in the summer months, they're very close to one another, the shops, because they're on cobble streets, very small. They're almost not even like roads. They're like, you know, sidewalks in between buildings. And I feel that 35mm or, you know, anything that's wider would work well in that sort of an environment. But when you talk about streets like Toronto, where I'm from, I think something like a 35 is just too wide. And as you said, it starts bringing in other elements, and those are distractions. When I was looking at your work, Paolo, the one thing I noticed, your subjects, which in many of your pictures are human beings, you have quite a few human beings in your pictures, okay? You do include the human element. And when I look at those pictures, I can clearly see that there must be some sort of thought in terms of positioning that subject. And what I mean by that is there are certain shots, for example, that I see here on your feed that you are clearly following rules, such as the rule of thirds. And you do that, and you have leading lines. You also, you can see that you're implementing that photographic technique. And then there are some photos that make no sense at all in terms of, let's say, quote unquote, photography rules, but you've positioned them in the frame that creates intrigue and curiosity and unique perspective, if I can say that. I'm curious, now that I'm actually speaking with you, when you take the pictures or when you're editing them, at what point during the photo taking are you actually thinking, do I want this subject here or do I want him here? So in other words, are you thinking about it when you're actually taking the shot on the street, or are you thinking about it more in post-production?
I don't really do post-production. It's just, you know, like you mentioned before, retouching contrast. I am completely illiterate. I only use Lightroom. I don't really have no other knowledge of any other software, because it's the closest thing we have to people who were born with real Lightrooms, like myself and probably you. So it's the closest thing. It's really intuitive. So there is no rearranging of things.
The way we see the picture is the way you are seeing the picture in the viewfinder.
Not necessarily. I might rearrange the lines in terms of leveling it a bit, or excluding. Imagine there's a lamp post on the corner that I think it's distracting. And if it doesn't really ruin the composition that I had in mind, then I will remove it. I will just cut that part of the image, and that's it. I can't really tell you my thoughts, because I don't think when I take pictures, I rarely think about the picture. It's after developing the film or looking at the files of the digital camera that I realize what I did. And sometimes I don't know what I did. Yeah, I put a lot of thought into it. And of course, I look at this and right, left. No, I don't, to be very honest. Of course, I have in mind, I always use, if possible, the screen I forgot the name now.
Yeah, the screen in the camera.
The screen with the lines for
the grid.
Remote. Because, yeah, that I use. I've always on the digital camera. The latest Nikons allow me to select it of the film cameras. I use it profusely because that helps me to compose. People say it's distracting. For me, it's not. So it's a sort of it's a tool.
That's what it's there for.
I use it. I have no really. So it's no shame. I use it. Of course, I don't have any pictures in my mind when I see some scenes, but you and me, we are devoted to photography. We like photography. We have seen thousands of pictures, and some have remained in my head, even if I'm not aware that they are there. So it's a bit like seeing a scene, you and me and any other photographer, and we just click because something inside our head probably has said, look, it's similar in a way to photography X. There you go. That's the justification. And sometimes, you know, I think that following the rules and the classics does not exclude you or me to try to be adventurous and do something that goes around against the rules. The rules are to be broken in every sense of art, from literature to painting to whatever. But in order to do that, you have first to know the basics and the references, the classics. That's only when you can rebel, inverted commas, and create something more daring, even for you, if it's not daring for the world, but for you. I suppose that's what I do. Sometimes I do the opposite of what I normally would do, because we have to have an open mind. I don't believe in imitating. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. It's true. But no, the fact that I like Cartier-Bresson or this or that does not mean that I want to emulate them. No, because the times are different. People are different. The streets are different. I don't live in Paris in the 1950s or 40s or 30s. Neither do you. So it's different. I don't long from the past. To make things short, to tell you the truth, I don't really think too much about what I'm doing sometimes. Sometimes I do. I recognize a scenery, like I mentioned before. And I said, wouldn't it be great to wait here for a while and to have someone standing there lighting up a cigarette against the light, having a silhouette of the person and the smoke out of the cigarette. And sometimes I wait, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, because I'm a bit impatient. I should wait more, but I don't. And then this happens.
I hear what you're saying. And there's actually, you know, as I look at your feed, you mentioned to me before that you like wide lenses. And there is one shot that I was looking at on your feed, on your Instagram feed, where I think you're using a wide lens here because it looks pretty wide to me. And it was taken on November 9th, 2022. And it's an image of a lady who I don't know if she's saying something to you or she's posing, but she's got her hands up like, you know, I don't know. She's an elderly lady. She's wearing a cheetah shirt and she's in some sort of a square. And behind her, you see sort of a skinny building. And to the left and the right, you have walkways and two other buildings. And it's a black and white image. There's this fellow sitting down to her left and he's looking at her. And it just, this whole image, like it's wide angle. It has to be a wide angle. You must be using a wide angle here. There's so much going on in it. You've got this interesting lady, you've got this fellow to the left, you've got this beautiful background, people are in the streets walking up and down these two roads. Can you talk a little bit more to this image to our listeners?
This lady was dancing by herself. She's a seller, a street seller. She sells towels and something like that to tourists with Portuguese traditional embroidering, something like that. There was this music. There was a street performer singing, because you cannot see it on the picture, much less listening. And she was dancing by herself. And then I started to take pictures of her. And she, of course, I don't really go incognito. And she rather liked it, because she's a nice lady. She's not young, but you see that she's not, she's not beautiful, but she's good looking still. And I think she was very, let's say, happy with me taking the picture, and she made this little pose, but she was actually dancing. And yes, you are right, it was taken with a 24mm, because in that picture I used my digital Sony, the RX100, and so it was 24mm. And that's what I had. I was really close to her. That's why I love super wide angles. You have to go very close to your subject to isolate it.
Okay, so when I look at this picture, there's a few things that hit me. The subject, and it's not just her. She's the main subject, for sure. But there's other subjects in this picture. And whether or not you did this intentionally, I don't know. You know, you have her positioned in the rule of thirds. So I'm not sure if you are aware of that, but she is positioned according to a photography rule. And then you've got, you know, these beautiful buildings in the background. It looks very busy, like the shot is very busy, but yet there's lots of separation. There's her, there's the buildings, there's the individual to the left. And believe it or not, an interesting composition piece for me is also the road, the cobblestones, the way they travel across the frame. And I just think the whole thing is magical. It just seems like a story. And see, for me, that's what a picture is. You know, lots of people say, I like the light, or I like this, and I like that. So for me, it's always about the story. That's what I look for in a picture first, a story. And this looks like there's a story here being told, right? For example, you told me she's dancing and there's music and you can't see it in the frame. You see, that's an untold story, and it's very interesting. So I really like this shot. I really do. I love this shot.
At the time, I did not think of any rule of thirds. But I think, like I mentioned earlier, we get that into our heads. I do. So when I compose a shot, I don't think, let me put, you know, the subject according to the rule of thirds. I just put it. For some reason, it is according to the rule of thirds. So because that's the way that I normally do. In that particular picture, I was fortunate. I really don't think twice about it. The interpretation that you gave of the photograph never crossed my mind, to be very honest. Now, looking at it, and with you describing it, it all makes sense, exactly like you said. It's true. It's interesting to see the lady, to see the two streets interconnecting at the middle and everything. But at the time, because I live here, so I see that every day, so I don't have enough distance to think twice and see, oh my God, the cobbled streets, because everything here looks exactly like that image, more or less. I live in a fabulous city to shoot street photography. The only thing that bothers me now is the amount of tourists. And it's very difficult to get that lady or that small square with no one around, or with very few human elements. I was lucky. But no, in all honesty, I did not think twice or before taking that picture.
When someone looks at your pictures, what is it that you hope they take from your pictures?
My pictures don't really serve a purpose. The only purpose they serve is really to... It's a way for me to have a register of things that I have found to be quite interesting. They serve no other purpose. I really don't have any... I should have, perhaps, but I really don't. When people see my pictures, I just want them to feel... In this case, you cannot see the vibrance of the atmosphere at the time, for instance, because photography is not cinema. So we have no sound, we have no movement. So it's a mimetic art, but it's very limited, because you cannot really transfer to the viewer the scene.
In a way, it leaves opportunity for the viewer to really open up the doors of interpretation.
Exactly. So because that's one, for me, one of the attractions of photography is, and at the moment that's a different subject, I think street photography is becoming very documental, just like documental photography. People shoot people on the street without worrying too much about interpretations and without creating an image that is something that you can reflect upon and have different interpretations. And for me, I have no goal taking pictures, like I mentioned before. It's just I publish them on Facebook and Instagram or Flickr or whatever. I just want people to feel what I felt at the time. Why did I take that picture? Because I found the lady, first, she was beautiful to me. She was very photogenic. Second, she was very at ease with the camera, with everyone. The atmosphere was intense, and I just wanted to convey that. If I did or I didn't, I don't know. But that's street photography for you. What I see, what I interpret, it's not what you possibly will interpret and will see. And that's the magic of photography, especially black and white, because black and white, there is this, it's already an interpretation, because you have to imagine the colors. You have no idea of the colors she was wearing, for instance. I remember it was vivid blue, because she had, it was a big game, soccer game of a club in the city. She had some garments with her regarding that, the colors of the club. But black and white does not tell you that. So it's your imagination. It's left to your imagination. So that's what I want people, when they look at my pictures, is to, you know, to imagine the rest.
Paolo, where can people go to see your work?
People can see my work on my Facebook page or my Instagram page.
And we'll have the links in the show notes below so our listeners can easily access that. Paolo, thank you very much for joining me here on the Street Photography Show. I really appreciated your time. I really appreciated getting to know you and getting inside your mind in how you operate when it comes to photographing. It was truly, truly exceptional. I really liked the stuff that you're producing. I loved your Instagram feed. I can't wait to see more. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was really a pleasure to talk to you. I hope our listeners will take an interest in my city, because it's a fabulous city to visit and to experiment what street photography can be.
If you enjoyed the show, please remember to follow and highly rate the show, as it allows me to continue creating more content for you, my awesome listeners. Also, don't forget to join us next week, as new episodes are added on Fridays. Until next time, keep walking and keep clicking. This is Mark Rossi. Bye for now.